The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome in, everybody. It's time for another edition of Need to Know. Kip Kiefer with you on the cusp, I guess, of the Ides of March. I always think about that this time of year as we come into March and spring and hope is eternal, what all the cliches we can come up with. But I've always heard, of course, it's associated with the Julius Caesar assassination, the Emperor of the Roman Empire on the Ides of March. But I've known part of the story from the classic Shakespearean play, Julius Caesar, that the Ides of March, which I did look up a couple of years ago just to see exactly when and why they're called that. It emanates from the Roman calendar, which was not conducted the way we're used to, counting the days to the end of the month. They used kind of a backward counting system from certain points of the month that I tried to understand and interpret, but I really didn't come up with anything. But basically, the Ides of March is kind of the middle period of the month. So between, say, the 10th and 20th is kind of the general range, and we're coming up into that now. And famously, in the play Julius Caesar, the scene that who knows if it's realistic or if it's just myth. But supposedly Julius Caesar early in the month of March was walking from the palace over to the Senate chamber and passed an old man who was always in the street who was considered a soothsayer, which is a term you don't hear very much anymore, but basically a seer of the future. And he called out to the emperor and got his attention and said, "Beware the Ides of March." And Caesar just kind of shrugged it off and went about his business. Well, several weeks later, in the throes of the middle of the month, he saw the old man again and couldn't resist looking over at him and saying, "Hey, seer, here we are in the Ides of March," and kind of shrugged. And the old man famously replied, "Yes, we are in the Ides of March, but the Ides of March are not concluded." That day in the Senate, Julius Caesar was stabbed repeatedly by members of the Roman Senate, which I know probably some senators in our modern day system here in America probably would have liked to have reenacted that with several presidents in recent years. But that is the famous story behind the ominous Ides of March. And here we are on the cusp of those. Now, I'm not a soothsayer, but I think the modern day equivalent of a soothsayer could be argued is a consultant, somebody who sees trends, sees the future, is aware of things, and can give good advice to public figures or people in prominent positions on how to conduct themselves and the best way to use the advice that they get for the strategies of how they should concentrate their efforts and messaging going forward. So in the tradition of the great seer who warned Julius Caesar and the Ides of March, I'm going to be the modern day equivalent today. And this one day only offer to several prominent people on this list, or people that believe themselves to be prominent, I'm going to give some free consulting advice. And I'm going to start with someone who was in the news for the wrong reasons last week, the now lame duck and soon to be former mayor of America's major city, Chicago, Lori Lightfoot. Now, Lori Lightfoot was a political unknown largely. She stormed on the scene in 2019. She ran in Chicago against political machines. She positioned herself as being different. This was a chance to vote for diversity. This was a chance to vote for a gay black woman to be mayor of Chicago and take the city in a whole different direction, healing and unifying and ensuring public safety and growth and prosperity, and everybody is going to benefit. Vote for Lori Lightfoot. In 2019, that was the message, and Lori Lightfoot did get into a runoff in the general election and crushed really her opponent in the runoff election, getting 73% of the vote, winning every single ward and district in Chicago, and sweeping into the mayor's office amid all this momentum and promise. And it was a vote for diversity. That's what we always hear. We need to give others a chance who are diverse and bring a new approach and new energy to these typically male-dominated positions. So Lori Lightfoot takes over as mayor in 2019. Now we're in 2023. Her four-year term is winding down, and the results of the new direction for Lori Lightfoot, well, let's just call it what it is: disastrous. Chicago is a terrible mess, much worse than when she took over in 2019. The murder rate is up 60%, violent crime some 37%. The city is just totally unsafe. It is not secure. Public safety has not been improved. It has been diminished with her and her partner, progressive DA Kim Fox, who has installed the turnstile form of justice as the Chicago police bring in suspects and try to make cases. She sends them right back out the door, not prosecuted, not punished, to conduct their affairs as they see fit. It's happening in a lot of big cities, and Chicago is certainly not immune to that. The murder rate on the south side of Chicago is ridiculous, and it's not just gang members taking out each other. It is a lot of people just walking the streets or playing in their yard or sitting on their porch. The gunfire is so prevalent that a lot of damage is being done to people that are just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And it's really just nightmarish what's happening there. Violent crime, smash and grab robberies of gangs coming in of 8 or 10 people to jewelry stores and expensive handbag retailers and things of the like, that make a quick strike, come in and smash display cases, steal merchandise, and walk right back out the door. And the Lori Lightfoot policy in Chicago has been to take away police's ability to chase perpetrators. So they have no exposure and very little chance of being caught or discovered. And even if they are arrested, the chances they'll be prosecuted are minuscule. So of course, that's led to just a disarray that it's hard to even describe in the Windy City. So Lori Lightfoot runs for re-election this year, and last Tuesday was the first round of that, and 9 other candidates lined up to be in the race. And so right away, what does that tell you? That the incumbent mayor is as vulnerable as a wounded tuna in the middle of the sea, surrounded by a school of hungry sharks. They knew she was vulnerable, and everybody and their brother-in-law got in the race. And Lori Lightfoot did not fare very well in the election last week. She came in third, so she beat 6 other contenders. Good for you, Lori. But running third in this particular instance is a loser, because she only got 17% of the vote. Now, think about that. 17 out of 100 people basically voted for Lori Lightfoot, after 73 of them out of 100 voted for her just 4 years ago. And serving in office and making a lot of promises is a lot different than, let me rephrase that. Serving in office and actually having a record that you can run on is a lot different proposition than having a lot of promises before you take office, with the approach of give me a chance, let me show you what I can do, let's go a different direction. I'm full of cliches today, but the proof is in the pudding. And Lori's pudding was just downright rotten. It didn't work out at all. Chicago voters just made a huge rebuke of her time in office, only giving her 17% of the vote. It's her reaction. And as a consultant, I'm going to give you some advice, Lori. Don't have press conferences like you did the next day and say, well, I guess our city just isn't ready for a gay Black woman to be mayor. They were really ready 4 years ago when you sold yourself on that basis and said, give me a chance to make a difference and take us in a different positive direction. But you have to go in and perform. It's almost like an airline. If you're on a flight, let's say you're on an international flight, and the pilot reports for duty and everybody goes, oh, God, he's an old white guy. He's got years of experience. He's got all kinds of flight hours. But let's go a different direction. Let's pick somebody that's diverse, that doesn't have any background. Other people need a chance. We need equity. We don't need to be celebrating and giving all the opportunities to the people at the top of the rung. We need to raise people up that have never had the opportunity and have been cheated by society and give them a chance. So let's put somebody in the cockpit that doesn't have any experience, but we can all be feeling good about ourselves on the flight because we have exercised the promise of diversity. And right away, the plane runs into turbulence, can't get off the ground, has a couple of near disasters. Almost crashes, whatnot. And about halfway through the flight, the crowd rises up and says, get that person out of the cockpit. The pilot needs to get back in there. That's the same kind of principle we have in these elections where we put somebody in charge that really is not up for the job. And it's a pretty graphic example because, again, diversity is great in concept. I said this last week here on Need to Know. I have no problem with giving anyone who's qualified and has earned the opportunity. If anyone is denied those opportunities because of what they look like or what their ideology of, that is absolutely wrong. And I am not in support of that whatsoever. However, you don't make things diverse just for the purpose of accomplishing the task when it doesn't make practical sense. And putting someone like Lori Lightfoot in the mayor's chair was a terrible mistake by Chicago voters. And the old adage, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, no, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me, really applied here because the Chicago voters weren't going to be fooled again. As the famous Who song, won't be fooled again. Well, they're not going to be because Lori Lightfoot is out of a job. And I would advise Lori not to be blaming her defeat, as she did the next day, on the fact that she's Black and a female. That had nothing to do with Lori. You had your chance at the wheel and you failed miserably. So accept your fate. Your political career is probably over. No one's going to be lining up to give you another opportunity. So, you know, Walmart needs greeters. There's a lot of good jobs available around the country since about half the workforce has not reported back to work. So turn your direction in a different way and best of luck to you. But again, people in the last 4 years did not turn into sexists and homophobes and racists because they overwhelmingly supported you and you didn't deliver. That's why you lost, not because you were a diverse choice for mayor. It's because you were an unqualified one. So let's move on from Lori to another guy that I've been talking about a lot, Pete Buttigieg, our Secretary of Transportation. Last night in Ohio, unbelievably, another Norfolk Southern train had a major derailment. 28 cars coming off the track about 200 miles from East Palestine, where it happened just a couple of weeks ago with disastrous results as toxic chemicals escaped into that community, into the ground, into the water, into the air. This time, thankfully, the bullet was dodged, although the 200-car train was carrying some toxic materials. Those particular cars did not derail, 28 of the 200, but not the hazardous material. cars. So we're not going to have a repeat, but it's another derailment. There's been three or four others in the couple of weeks since East Palestine. I told you here last week that there is an average of three train derailments every single day in America. That's over 1,000 a year. We've got a big problem. Here's my consulting advice to Pete Buttigieg, the Secretary of Transportation, another diversity appointment who had no background other than owning a Prius in transportation expertise. Pete, I really got a strong suggestion for you, and I hope you'll take my free consulting advice. There is a huge problem with the railroads, and you are the Secretary of Transportation. I've got a lot of experience in crisis management and coming up with common sense solutions to address problems. This problem needs to start with you actually getting out of wherever you hang out and hide and stay out of the public view, unless you want to pop up and talk about woke policies and how the interstate system in America, which completely made this country a unbelievable success. It linked all of the major areas. The Interstate Act of the 1950s that took almost 30 years to complete opened up commerce and cities and transportation and really transformed our country into a worthy and wealthy country, but into a mega power because it gave mobility and tremendous economic opportunity to so many people. Of course, Pete Buttigieg says the interstate system was racist because it was built largely through a lot of lower income and minority neighborhoods. You know, I'm sorry, the internet system is not racist. It gave everybody an equal opportunity at commerce and mobility, and it was one of the great things ever done by the U.S. government. So instead of focusing on transportation, Pete's worried about woke issues and things of that nature that he thinks will make him more popular because he still believes, as the former mayor of South Bend, Indiana, that he is qualified to be president of the United States. Well, this performance as Secretary of Transportation is quickly ending any speculation of that being any possibility. Pete, if you want to revive your career and do something substantial, you need to get all the principals together, all of the railroads, and I understand that they are very secure. They're a major donor to mostly Democrat candidates, and they pour millions of dollars in to buy influence in Washington. But this is a problem that's going to continue to get worse and is going to result and decimation of communities and deaths of Americans. Who knows what the long-term implications of this East Palestine situation is? You need to do your job. If you're Secretary of Transportation, you need to go find out why this is happening. And again, I'm not an expert on transportation, but I have some pretty good theories. Number one, why do we have 200 car trains? And you know how much personnel from Norfolk Southern manned that particular train that derailed last night? Two employees on the train for Norfolk Southern pulling 200 cars at a high rate of speed with hazardous materials on board. Now, just common sense tells you that maybe that's a few too many cars to be going at a breakneck speed. And with all of the situations of derailments that we're dealing with, maybe slowing things down. I know for profitability, that would probably be a bad thing. A few less cars going not so fast makes a lot of sense. Also, for some reason now, regulatory requirements don't even call for the railway companies to even inform states when they're pulling hazardous materials on these trains. This is the second example in a row that Ohio officials said they had no idea there was hazardous materials being transported in this particular run. That's got to stop. So practicality, regulation, it really doesn't make any sense. And are again, the fact that labor is so short, does that mean we've got a lot of railroad cars on the tracks that need serious renovation or refurbishment? Are we running dangerous equipment? What about the rail systems? I hear all the time experts saying that many rail systems are cracked and broken or insecure because they've been in place for so many years. It sounds to me like a tremendous renovation needs to take place of all the rails themselves around the country, as well as the equipment that's running on them. This is just common sense things. And if you're Secretary of Transportation, you don't just shrug and say, well, what happened to East Palestine isn't that big a deal. It happens every day. We've got three train derailments a day around the country. Don't just talk about it, Pete. Do something. Be Secretary of Transportation. That's the title you have. You wanted it to be President of the United States, but you didn't get any support for that. And they threw you a bone for diversity's sake and made you the Secretary of Transportation. Either do the job or resign and get the hell out of the way and let somebody serious with transportation background, railway background, run that show, because this has got to stop. The next major absolute disaster tragedy has to be right around the corner when something that is truly toxic, like what happened in East Palestine, happens again in even a bigger population area. You've got to step up. Either do your job or leave that post to somebody who knows how to do it. Another item I came across this week, I've got some consulting advice for San Francisco, Denver, and Portland, those three cities. And I'm sure there's some others, but these are the three that was highlighted in this documentary I saw. Do you folks realize that all of these cities, I'm sure you realize this fact, all three of those cities have tremendous homeless populations. And homelessness is a tragic thing. People living on the streets, it's a terrible societal ill right now that really needs to be addressed. And the way that San Francisco and Denver and Portland are approaching it is so absurd that it just makes me physically ill to hear the report that all of these cities are actually paying homeless people a monthly amount of money ranging from $1,200 in San Francisco down to $800 a month in Denver, handing them a check for money and giving them food stamps that will help sustain them in their time of homelessness. It was listening to the interviews of many of the people living on the streets, and more than one, several said, hey, I mean, this is a great deal. This is rent-free. I live to get high every day. This one girl said, I get high every hour. And these other guys are hopelessly hooked on all kinds of drugs like OxyContin and Percocet, Vicodin, all of these opioid pain-killing drugs. And the money that these city officials in these leftist liberal areas that think they're doing such good, where do they think the money's going? The money is going into buying drugs. They're in providing facilities for people to shoot up and do different things in these areas. It's just unconscionable to me that someone that has the authority and is involved in government in these localities doesn't know that almost every dime committed to these folks is just going into facilitating their drug habit. It's not improving their situation. They're not using it to get out of that situation. One guy said, hey, they provide three square meals a day and give me money so I can buy my drugs. This is the greatest deal in the world. Another guy said, yeah, I get, even before all these prices were increased, all these handouts were increased. He said, for years in LA, I lived on the street and they gave me both a $400 a month, expense check and also gave me $250 a month in food stamps. He says, the first thing I would do is go online and sell my food stamps for $100. And then go cash my $400 out. I'd have $500 to buy drugs. He said, and within 3 days, I was completely broke again, waiting for next month. It's a vicious cycle, and all they're doing is facilitating it, because the main cause of homelessness, and again, my heart goes out to people on the street because economic crisis or other disasters of their life have forced them to do that. But so many people are out there that are hopelessly drug addicted or mentally ill, and giving them money only feeds the beast. It does not do anything to improve their circumstances, and it makes it less likely that they're going to seek any kind of solution in terms of resolving their situation. It really, if you give it some thought and hear the voices of people that are out there, it just is so maddening and so ridiculous that these do-gooders, thinking that they're doing the right thing for people that are homeless, are actually pouring gasoline on a raging fire. So some free consulting advice this week. I think that everybody should take heed. My final one is to Merrick Garland, our Attorney General of the United States. Merrick Garland, of course, if you recall, was appointed by Barack Obama upon the death of Antonin Scalia, the Supreme Court justice that passed away in the last year of the Obama term. And Merrick Garland was his choice to replace him. But with an election coming up, the Senate did what every Senate in previous times in the same circumstance have done. They did not bring up Garland for nomination. It was a Republican-controlled Senate, and they were going to wait till the election, and they did, and the time passed, and Donald Trump, of course, was elected a Republican president, who immediately used his ability to nominate a replacement, which was Neil Gorsuch, who the Senate did hear and put in place. So Merrick Garland was just out. So when Joe Biden became president here in 2020, his nominee for the Attorney General's office, Merrick Garland, who obviously, if he's even halfway human, has resentment for what happened to him in the Supreme Court situation. So as the chief law enforcement officer of the United States, he had been a judge for 20 years on the federal court system, but not eminently qualified to be the chief law enforcement officer. Anyway, he stepped into the position hardly in a position where he would be unbiased and equal application of the law. He had a big resentment against Trump and all the Republican senators and anybody who supported any of those people. And you can see in the application of the laws how he is conducting himself. He was absolutely barbecued last week on the Senate floor in a hearing asking about unequal application of the law, why the left is basically treated with kid gloves and the right, including Mark Houck, a guy we told you about here on Need to Know previously. He's an evangelical Roman Catholic, heavily anti-abortion, but not a major activist or protester. He's the father of seven. He has a regular job. And about a month ago, actually was right before the end of the year, back in November, Houck and his seven children and his wife were up for breakfast, getting ready to go off to work and school respectively. And 24 FBI agents with shields and guns drawn came and banged on the door and took him away in handcuffs with a SWAT type of raid. And the offense was, a year previously, Mark Houck and seven other people from his church had stood out and peacefully prayed in front of an abortion clinic. And they were cited on a obscure federal charge of obstructing the entrance to an abortion center. The local authorities chose not to press charges because they were not violent and were not obstructing anyone. But the Garland Justice Department dispatched 24 FBI agents to this suburban home and terrorized this family, leading their father away in chains. It's a blatant example of the fact that in the time leading up to the aftermath of the Floyd murder, and it was a murder, and the officer responsible is convicted and now is serving in prison, The protests were just ridiculous, with firebombings and violence in all kinds of American cities, resulting in no arrests. And the few that there were, celebrities and other politicians rallied to bail these people out. And then when the decision came down on the Docs case last year on abortion rights, we had a repeat of that kind of violence, particularly on Catholic churches and pregnancy advocacy centers. And those people were not arrested at all after these demonstrative displays on people that are on the other side of the discussion. And when asked to explain that, Garland perhaps had the lamest answer in the history of American politics when he said, well, most of these other protests at abortion clinics and the like happen in daylight, so we've got clear photography and can identify the perpetrators. Most of the others on the other side happen in the dark of night, and those identities are much harder to come up with and require much more investigative effort. That was his excuse. It was night and day, literally. Merrick Garland, I think you are ill-cast. Another person I would advise to step aside and let a real professional run our Department of Justice. Lady Justice is supposed to be blind, and you are anything but in the way you're applying, or in this case, not applying equal protection under the law. We're out of time. I appreciate your listening to my consulting advice. If any of you need consultation, just let me know. I'm always standing by, whether it's the Ides of March or not. I'm Kip Kiefer. Don't miss our new show, Kiefer and Curry, as we tackle all kinds of interesting sports, entertainment, even political issues. Nothing is immune to Kiefer and Curry. We're going to talk about some more interesting things this week on the show, and it's going to be great. Can't wait. Proud to be on TKR and looking forward to talking to you again very soon with everything you need to know.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.